The conversation continues with Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
And welcome back to the Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk TNT. And yes, we are dynamite. In this hour, we'll be talking to comedian Alistair Williams about why comedy appears no longer to be a laughing matter and whether we should actually forgive those who push harmful narratives against us in the first place. We'll also be joined by TNT political editor Basil Valentine, who will be analysing the events over the weekend regarding Iran and Israel. Now, before we move over to our next guest, and indeed before we're joined by Gemma, I wanted to talk about another Gemma, Gemma O'Doherty. Gemma and I don't always agree on matters, but we both agree on what it means to be persecuted and targeted for doing our jobs as journalists. Gemma has been put through a type of hell in Ireland's legal system, and last week she was in danger of being imprisoned. Gemma, for those who don't know, is the editor of the Irish edition of The Light, and The Light has written a stinging editorial about what is happening to Gemma. Her persecution started a year ago when The Light Ireland highlighted the pandemic, quote unquote, of young adult deaths in Ireland following the rollout of the vaccine. The Light has been accused of, well, all manner of things. They denied, including they did not say that the deaths of these young people were absolutely caused by the vaccine. They said that we need to know what is happening and why are so many young people dropping like flies. These are fair questions. These are questions that we need to ask, and we certainly should not be pursued through a court of law for doing so. And this one particular article has been used to threaten Gemma with imprisonment. And if this does not send shivers down your spine, it ought to, because they're coming for all of us. I mean, that's the reality. We've seen what's happened to Julian Assange. They simply do not like real journalism getting in the way of official narratives. There was also the issue of The Light using an image which is freely available on the internet and for which the judges are saying that The Light harassed the individual involved. And Gemma will be joining me one day to go into this in more detail. We just have to make sure that we cross all of the legal hoops before we do so. And also, just briefly, we've been talking last week about the Coldy Island review. Well, I was talking with Kevin O'Connell, who's at the centre of that review over the weekend. And Kevin asked me, he said, could you please put this on your show as I spent over 18 grand of my own money fighting for justice? I would be very grateful, said Kevin. And what it is, it's a flyer about Coldy Island's dark past. And the reality is, Kevin has had to find that money, he and his wife, Carol, in order to be able to raise the necessary attention for this review to happen in the first place. And the flyer actually talks about, you can find all this on GoFundMe under Coldy Island, and it actually talks about Coldy Island's dark past. And Kevin said, as a victim myself, I continue to campaign for justice with help from my wife, Carol, and the Coldy Island Survivors Campaign. You can support me by sharing our website and Facebook page. I've spent my savings on the campaign, so if you want to help me print more flyers and keep the website online, please donate whatever you can. This is really important because I think we are about to unpack a very serious situation just off the coast of Wales. And certainly from this show and from others, we wish Kevin and the other survivors a great deal of hope and faith. There's Kevin on the screen when he was a little boy being abused, and he has more recently returned to Coldy Island. And it's obviously a scene of great pain for him because he was subject to not just abuse, but ritualistic torture as well. There he is looking out over the bay. Right, just a quick mention to another Carol. Good morning to you, Carol. Carol contacted us about excess deaths. And Carol has come up with some new expressions that we might want to use. And I like it. If you remember last week, we were talking to Mark Atwood. We were trying to find another word for awakened. And Carol has come up with consciousness rising. She likes activated, which we also agreed on. She says, obviously, opposite to asleep. I guess black-pilled is the opposite of sheep. Walled over, she said. And also regarding the vaccine, she said, that perhaps we should consider calling it Gene Death Alerted. Indeed. And keep your suggestions coming, everybody. And of course, always contact us at TNC, at TNT. We love hearing from you. We'll be right back with our Gemma and the headlines.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And here she is, the return of Gemma Cooper in this second hour.
Thanks very much, Sonia. Well, obviously, war is still the dominating headline. But just quickly before I go into some others, you know, we're talking about vaccine harm and vaccine damage. And another footballer, Evan Ndika, I think, over the weekend, he collapsed on the pitch, didn't he? The Roma player. He's been posting selfies of himself in hospital. Apparently, he's in good spirits. But, you know, it's completely normal for very fit, active, super athletes, which footballers are, to just be collapsing left, right and centre. So, you know, I'm glad he's up in bed and I'm glad he's not dead. But, you know, how many more do we have to see collapsing, keeling over, and everyone saying this is perfectly normal, it's always happened? But if you're a certain age, you know, it's not perfectly normal and it didn't always happen. So, you know, it's just so mind-bogglingly ridiculous now, isn't it, to not be able to people connect the dots. I mean, obviously we connect the dots, but the mainstream, I wonder, just one more kind of, you know, when you pull the straw out of the house of cards or the final card collapses and the whole thing comes down, I just wonder how long it's going to be before that actually does have to happen.
Well, I think that with the advent of organisations like ours, I think it's the haste of their death is coming sooner rather than later. I mean, the fact is that sudden deaths have always happened. We know that for a fact, but we cannot even begin to explain the absolute multitude of sudden deaths and apparently young and fit and healthy people. The sheer volume of sports stars collapsing on a pitch is, we cannot ignore that, Gemma. We simply cannot ignore that. And that has not always happened. We'd have known about it if it always happened. So something definitely has been introduced that is problematic. And we wonder what that could possibly be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on old Evan. And hopefully he does make a very speedy recovery and hopefully at some point an investigation. But there we go. War is still the dominating story after the events of the weekend. I know you've got Basil Valentine coming on, our TNT's political editor, to go into the political aspects of it. And we discussed this at length at the top of the last hour. A good news story for the UK, though, and that's smart motorways. Very controversial, dangerous, according to many. And the UK's biggest automobile body, the RAC, is now calling on the government to just scrap them all. Rishi Sunak last year announced that he wasn't going to plough forward with 14 more of these technological highways. And the RAC is saying, well, that's all very well and good. It's a year to the day since he scrapped the rollout, but let's scrap the existing ones. They're just not fit for purpose and they do cause deaths. Also, Parliament resumes today after the Easter recess. Nice for MPs to have a nice big break. And one of the things that will be discussed and voted on is the Rwanda bill, the controversial scheme here in the UK to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda in Africa. Apparently, there are other countries now being considered if the scheme is successful. Costa Rica, Armenia, and the Ivory Coast could also be places where failed asylum seekers or illegal asylum seekers are deported to before ever setting foot in the UK. So that is one to watch, I think, with interest today and through the rest of the week, Sonia.
Let's have a look at this smart motorway story. I often get confused about what is a smart motorway, Gemma.
I think a lot of people do. I mean, myself, I reading through the details of this, I mean, essentially a smart motorway is where there is no hard shoulder. And the idea is that the hard shoulder is used as an extra lane. This was supposed to save money, to avoid having to build extra lanes or widen motorways, because that's a costly and time-consuming and expensive thing to do. But the RAC is saying that they have caused more than 50 deaths have been linked to smart motorways. It's all to do with the technology. I'm not even entirely sure myself when you know you're on one and when you're not. I hate driving on motorways. I never go on them myself. But essentially, it was a year ago that Sunak said we're not going to roll them out. The first one was in 2014 on the M25 in parts of Hertfordshire, and the plan was to roll them right out across the country. That's still been scrapped, and that cost the taxpayer. The scrapping of the scheme was a billion, because there's so much money been put into hopefully making these super digital highways accessible for more parts of the UK. But they are just to too dangerous. The Department of Transport has kind of acknowledged this. I don't know whether we'll see the scrapping of existing ones, but basically it was a cost-cutting exercise in the first instance because there's too much traffic on UK roads. We're a small island nation and people just weren't getting around quick enough. So the idea was widen the motorways out and use the hard shoulder, which is dangerous if you break down. There's nowhere to go. And the Highways Agency is looking at building further, where you can basically like a sort of pull in place where you can go if you do.
Oh,
break
you
down,
like a stop. You're talking about like a service station, a stop. Yeah. Okay.
Well, not a service station, but more kind of like a driving area, like a drive.
Oh, like they do in France, because France, obviously their motorways, you have them on a constant basis, like almost every 20 miles. We don't have that in the UK, right? Well, we just have like parking lanes, don't we, that you can pull into.
Yeah, similar to that. That's the plan anyway. But the RAC is still saying we don't need that. We just need all the existing bits that are smart. Where you don't have a hard shoulder, you want to open it right the way back up, have a hard shoulder. It's safe. And also this has come from drivers as well, a survey last year amongst drivers. So people don't feel safe driving on smart motorways. You don't feel safe where there's no hard shoulder and you're letting basically technology control the flow of traffic. So we talk a lot here on TNT, don't we, about the dangers of a digital age. And I think this was kind of part of that. Yeah. Getting us all everything smart, including the way we drive. But of course, you can't really factor in the human side of driving. If you're, you know, you've got tired drivers or you've got someone who's been on the road too long, just accidents. I mean, motorways are notorious. There's certain black spots in part of the UK here in the southwest, you know, junction 25, I think, of the M5 as you go from sort of Somerset into Devon. That's a notorious accident black spot. I don't think that is a smart motorway at all. But we're hopefully we might see a continued backpedaling on letting technology sort of take over every aspect of our lives. And the RAC, which has got quite a voice and millions of members, does win on this, and we see not just a kind of no rollout. We see a return to traditional driving on traditional UK motorways.
Well, let me read you some of the comments. Just a bloke says, smart equals stupid, another inversion of our language. And honestly, I truly don't understand what makes that motorway a smart motorway by actually making it more dangerous and removing the very thing that many people see as a sort of saviour. Because it can be quite frightening when you're on a motorway and it's just stretching on forever. I've been on a motorway with a car that was breaking down, Gemma, and you are extremely grateful for that hard shoulder. So yeah, obviously lots of problems with that. I've talked to traffic cops as well, who said they are notoriously bad. Nobody wants to police smart motorways. And so I think these things are very interesting. And again, it was like, what was that all about? Right? What was that all about? Who could that possibly have benefited? But as you say, it's expensive to extend a motorway. So that would obviously have been a consideration. But when are we going to start considering not just the cost of everything, but people's safety, right? When is that going to be the priority? And it never seems to be the priority. It always seems to be convenience, cost. And we seem to always come last in this. So I think that is very concerning. But having said that, I am delighted that. Do you think they're going to be phasing them out proper now? Do you think this is the start of the end for them?
That is the call. That is the call today. You know, the RAC does have millions of members, so it will have, you know, canvassed opinion as well from its own kind of stalwart membership. But also just the word smart, and you're quite right, smart motorway, smart meters. It's always dressed up as convenient and easy, and it's often anything but, and it's definitely not safe. Smart meters in homes aren't safe. You know, the level of EMF they give off, and also they get the meter readings wrong. We've done acres and acres of stories here on TNT about smart meters and how people are being billed for power usage that's not theirs because the smart meters are tuning into data from another part of the country and billing people for $3,500 when their last bill was 20 quid, you know, that kind of thing, which is incredibly, incredibly stressful. So it seems that anything with the word smart on it, of course, is not smart. It's stupid, as the chat alluded to there, and never for the benefit of the consumer. Certainly, in the terms of motorways, more than 50 deaths linked to smart inception, and smart meters causing people sleepless nights and untold stress for these bills, which then people are then chased for and have to prove they didn't use it. So anything with smart, and we all know here at TNT, you know, stay away. It's terrible technology, and it doesn't benefit anyone except those who would seek to control us. Simple as that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And the clue is in the first two letters, of course, self-monitoring, right? And that we cannot forget. We're it's like at such speed, we're evolving to this world that apparently is all about self-monitoring, whether that's the checkout in the local supermarket, which incidentally, I've noticed that my local supermarket now has cameras on every, you know, self-service checkout, which I'm completely disturbed by, but that's going off on a tangent. But listen, Gemma, thank you very much for talking to us about our motorways, which are anything but smart. On that note, we'll be right back.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. TNTRadio.live.
Online.
Online.
Online streaming.
Be a part of the conversation.
I stream it all at work, and I stream it to my phone and listen to it wherever I go.
TNT.
And now I'm delighted to be joined by a man with two very distinct honours. Firstly, he was named Comedian of the Year 2023 by the comedy website Chortle, which is pretty good going, seeing as he's also known as the world's most cancelled comedian. He is, of course, Alistair Williams, and he joins me now. Good morning, Alistair. How are you this morning?
I'm excellent. How are you doing?
Well, I'm excellent too, actually, Alistair. Nice. I'm excellent too, which is absolutely great. How did you, for the benefit of our overseas viewers and any viewers who may not be familiar with you, how did you become the world's most cancelled comedian?
Just by doing the job properly, you know, just by telling the truth and pointing out all the nonsense that we live through. You know, it's not hard. You just have to do the job properly and they'll soon get rid of you. You know what I mean?
Comedians have become really wussy, haven't they? I mean, that's what you're really saying, is that any comedian with a backbone who actually does what comedians have traditionally done, i.e. look at societal problems, is now earmarked as problematic, right?
I mean, there's not many. It's all geared around getting on the television now. It doesn't matter what level of comedy you're doing. Even if you just want to perform live shows in this country and you don't want to be on the television, they don't really let you do the live shows unless you've been on the television. Like the people that book the live shows, they're like, we're looking for someone that's been on the television. So the television controls everything in comedy. And in order to get on the television, they want you to be saying something like this. You have to be saying what the television's always saying. So, you know, pick a narrative. You have to be saying what the television's saying. And if you don't want to say what the television's saying, you won't be able to have a career. But what was interesting with me is I started taking my stuff to the internet and people started really sort of engaging with it. And I was growing a big following on the internet, sort of going around the television, and then they canceled me on the internet. So it's not just about the television. It's about controlling the narratives. It's about controlling what people like, if you know what I mean.
And yet you're still winning awards. So somewhere you're able still to make a mark, right?
Well, they let the audience vote for that one, which is the only reason why I entered. I've entered many competitions and I've been one of the standout acts. And then the judges are like, it's this guy or it's this lady. And the audience is like, huh? So that's the way they control those things. That the people that give out the awards are Guardian journalists or, you know, comedy journalists. And they're all part of the same thing. So when it was audience voted, I was like, okay, this is a competition that I'll enter. You know, that's the only reason why I won, because they let the people laughing actually decide who was funny.
That's almost revolutionary in this day and age, right? We've entered a really scary time. Obviously, I could not invite you on here without referring to Scotland's new hate crime laws. So what we've had is Al Murray, for example, the pub landlord. He recently said that those hate crime laws puts comedians at risk. Would you reconsider playing in Scotland? Not reconsider, would you be concerned about playing in Scotland at this stage?
No, I think most of these things, they're just put out there to scare you, you know? And most of these laws and stuff, you have to consent to them to be governed by them, you know? And most of this stuff is illegal. You know what I mean? Like, they try and pretend like, oh, we're going to put you in prison if you say something we don't like. Go on then. Go on then. You know, like, most of the time, they won't follow through on this stuff. And, you know, you're a free human being. You can say whatever you like. You know, these people, they need you to consent to these laws and be afraid of them for them to work. If everyone ignores it, what are they going to do? You know?
We've entered a really strange space, though, haven't we? Because I think we'd heard last week that there were like 7,000 reports to Scotland within the first week of those ridiculous hate crimes being introduced. So, but I think one of the things, I mean, not everybody is like you. So I think it sends a chilling effect to people, right? And that is part of the problem, because some of the people who will book you, they will receive that chilling effect of, oh, he might be too controversial. So that will ultimately impact you, even if you're standing up and being counted, right?
That's what they want. The chilling effect is the point of these things. That's what they want. That's why you see these videos on Twitter of like, oh, this guy was praying and they arrested him. And, you know, to be honest with you, Sonia, I don't believe half of these things. I think most of it is theater. It's put up there to be like, look at this scary thing that happened to this person who was just living their normal life. And it teaches regular people, like, oh, you better get your head down. You better agree with whatever they tell you to do, because they can arrest you for praying, or they can arrest you for telling a joke now. You know, I think that's what it's designed to do. And I hear what you're saying. And if you do go along with it, then yeah, it can start to really sort of control your life. But I don't watch the news. I'm not even really aware of these hate crime laws. I know lots of people are getting very excited about it. I kind of ignore these people, especially the people running the country. And I just live a good, decent life. And if they start to encroach on me, then it's a problem. But generally, you can just live a good, normal, decent life, ignore what the news is saying, and you won't have too many problems, you know?
You refer to yourself as a soldier of God. You're a religious man.
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't say religious, but I'm a Christian. You know, there's a finite difference. The world's religion is what a lot of the problems from today come from. Christians are actually Christians. Proper Christians wouldn't describe themselves as religious. Jesus was persecuted by the religious leaders of the time. There's a big difference between being a Christian and being religious. But I am a Christian, just like, you know, 95% of people in this country used to be. You know, a few hundred years ago, when everything was great and men were going in the men's bathroom and women's were going in the women's bathroom, and, you know, everything was fairly normal. You
did
know?
That happen?
Now we're going in a completely different direction. We've decided that we don't need the Bible. We don't need God. And things have never been more miserable, more terrifying, like you say. There's an interesting phrase, God-given rights. You ever hear that one? You're like, these are my God-given rights. Well, we've thrown God in the bin. And now all of a sudden your rights are disappearing. Like you said, you know, oh, you don't have the right to speak anymore. You know, you don't have the right to be a man anymore. You don't have a right to say that's a man or a woman anymore, because we don't believe in God anymore. We don't have the protection of a society that all agree that we believe in God and we follow his laws. Now it's a free for all and things are getting worse and worse and worse. So yeah, someone like me is just saying, okay, I'm going back to, you know, what made Western society basically, which is following Jesus.
Is that why you decided to do your Sunday service series?
Well, the church on Sunday is just me reading the Bible for half an hour, 45 minutes every Sunday. And that's all it is. I don't really comment on it or anything. I just read it out there, you know, and that's pretty much all it is. But people enjoy it. I really do think it helps people, you know, it really does. Most people, everyone in this country used to read the Bible all the time. Now no one does, you know, and it's a very different world that we live in now. You know, it's very unsafe. People don't feel safe to walk the streets anymore. You know, we don't live in a God-fearing country anymore. We don't live in a God-fearing world anymore. And people that fear God are the best people to be around, because you don't have to worry about them, because they're fearing God. You know, God keeps them in line. You don't have to worry about them doing anything crazy, you know, and that's how everyone used to be. And things used to be very different. Now, no one believes in God. And it's like I say, it's a free for all.
It's mad out there. Right. Let's go to some news headlines and we will be right back and find out more from Alistair Williams.
The conversation continues.
You guys are awful positive today for what we're witnessing. It's that division that they want to push.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps launched a significant attack on Israel this past Saturday, firing 300 drones and missiles from both Iran and locations controlled by its regional proxies. This marks the first direct military assault by Iran and Israel. The Israeli military has mobilized two reserve brigades for operations in Gaza. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has strongly condemned Iran's recent military attacks on Israel, describing them as a significant threat to both Israel and regional security.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, I'm here with Alistair Williams, and we're talking about all manner of things from cancelled comedy to religion on Sunday and you name it. But you also made a good point, Alistair. You said, I don't watch TV. Do you think sometimes, because some people obviously said throughout C19, well, I wasn't affected by the measures because I didn't watch the propaganda on TV. And to a degree, that is what is happening about any new initiatives, right?
Yeah. I mean, you watch the news, you're going to be terrified. You're going to be anxious. You're going to be, you know, so terrified, usually about things that are going on in Gaza or, you know, Ukraine. It's like, how much does that actually impact your life if you think about it? You know, there's so many people on the planet that you can just zoom in on these horrible atrocities that are happening nowhere near you, and you can live your life, you know, disgusted and terrified and horrified, or you could just, you know, live locally and have a nice life. And because I don't believe the news has your best interest at heart, I don't believe it is what it says it is. I don't believe that they're actually out there looking for the truth and reporting it. I think that's a nonsense. You know, I think it's used to control the way people think. So I ignore it and I encourage others to do the same.
Well, just a bloke says in comments, almost all the comedians I used to like, I now despise. And I think to a degree, this is what's happened, is that many people used to see comedy as, you know, commenting on social issues, raising awareness to really important issues that we need to discuss. And that's not what's happening. And obviously, what your experience very much has been is that comedians have to follow now a certain path if they want to even be able to, you know, they have to follow what's going on TV. Basically, they have to follow official narratives in order to be able to rise up, right? So we know that happens. And the reason why you won that award was because it was voted for by the people. See, the thing is, once you cut through the middleman, those sort of middle executives, right, and you just get to the people, that's when the fun starts, right? Because for the most part, people are not buying all this, right? People want to go back to the old days of comedy where comedians could say outrageous things and make outrageous commentary and make us think, right? Is that your experience as well?
That is what people want. But what comedians are supposed to do is sort of point out the ridiculous things in society and sort of ridicule them. And the time we've just lived through, like COVID-19, one of the most ridiculous times you'll ever see, you know, ever. The rules that they enforced that made no sense, and then all of your sort of heroes, if you like, all your sort of famous musicians and famous comedians just, you know, went along with everything. You know, get this injection or you're a terrible person. Put your hand up if you've not been vaccinated. Now punch yourself in the face. Ha ha. You know, this is awful. It's awful. And people that I used to look up to as being like observationists and these keen minds, it's like, wait a second, you don't see anything weird going on here? Like, you know what I mean? With your great comedian's observational skill, you think this is all just great and normal. It's like, no, you don't think that. You just want your seat at the table. You know, you don't want to get kicked off the television. So what they tell you to say, you know, you say it. And it was a great opportunity to see who's really real during that period, for celebrities, I mean. You know, yeah, most
absolutely. Yeah, we saw who was bought and sold, didn't we? We saw who had been neutered by all of this. Absolutely. Which brings me on to something else that you have tackled as well. And that is, how do we trust those who advocate official narratives? So, for example, jabs and lockdowns. And you have tackled this issue. And there are some people who are in the freedom movement, quote unquote, and some of them now leading elements of the freedom movement. And they were very much pro-lockdown, pro-jabs, and now they've done a 180 or a 360, whatever it is, when you completely turn around. And now it's very much the other way. Do you trust people like that?
I mean, trust, no. You know, most people that have a big platform that are leading people, I tend not to trust that, because as someone that's been actually cancelled, I know what it's like to be cancelled. And you're not cancelled with like 6 million YouTube subscribers, for example. If you're the number one account on Rumble, and you know, you're not cancelled. If you've got millions of YouTube subscribers, you're not cancelled. You're being allowed to say the things that you're saying. And the people that we're up against, they're not stupid. They know that there's a resistance to what they're doing, because most of it is very evil. And the best way to control the opposition is to lead it ourselves. So most of the giant accounts that you'll see who are leading the opposition, you should be very sort of skeptical of. But, you know, judge a tree by its fruit. You know, look at what these people produce and what they were saying when it mattered. When people were being coerced into having an experimental medical procedure, what were these people saying then? Were they, when it really counted, were they standing up and saying, wait a minute, this is wrong, this is, you know, or were when it mattered, were they saying something different? Because once someone's made that decision, And it's too late, then it's very easy to turn around and be like, oh, I was wrong back then, but now I'm so totally right, and you should listen to me. But, you know, just use your own discernment and, you know, make up your own mind, I would say. If more people think for themselves, I think we'd be in a better position. You don't need somebody to tell you what to think. You know, make your own mind up, and I think we'd be better off.
I mean, that's it as well. We need to stop looking for heroes, right? It's kind of, you know, I'm sorry, it's going to sound really corny, but sort of find the hero within yourself. That's really what needs to take place, isn't it? Is people need to stop looking so much outside of themselves and look inwards and realise what they themselves bring to the table. But Alistair, here's the thing. What about the role of forgiveness? Because we know for a fact. So just use, for example, politicians, right? Look, Andrew Bridgen is a perfect example. So politicians, by and large, absolutely followed the narrative, still continue to maintain that mRNA, you know, gene therapy is absolutely safe and effective, that lockdown was necessary. The COVID inquiry is angled all around, essentially creating this whitewash scenario. So Andrew Bridgen is one of the very few members of parliament who is speaking up. And yet he promoted jabs. We saw images of him actually receiving the jab. He voted for lockdown, but he's now standing up and being counted. And as I say, one of the very few members of parliament who is. So what about the role of forgiveness? Because surely we need Andrew Bridgen's on our side.
Well, forgiveness is hugely important. You should forgive everyone. You should forgive everyone, whether they're now on your side or not. Everyone should be forgiven, because you want to be forgiven for the things that you've done wrong, and all of us have done wrong. So, you know, you should be forgiving everyone. But there's a difference between forgiveness. I can forgive someone, but I don't have to follow them where they're going. You know, so if I don't think someone is acting in good faith and I think they're still leading the lemmings off the cliff, I don't have to follow them. Sure, I'll forgive them. I don't agree with people who are like, I'll never forgive these people for what they've done to us. I'll never forgive these people for pushing these injections. You should forgive everyone. The Bible's very clear on that. Forgiveness is non-negotiable. I forgive everyone, even people that I consider to have done unspeakably evil things. I find forgiveness in my heart for them, but that doesn't mean that I trust them. That doesn't mean that I'm willing to follow them. I am willing to forgive them, but I'm not. That doesn't mean that I have to, you know, take their advice or listen to what they say, especially if I think they're of questionable character.
But also, we have to. There has to be a degree of humility as well, doesn't there? Once, you know, any of us are open to making terrible mistakes, right? And we have to kind of like fess up. Okay, look, I've messed up here. And I think some of what is lacking amongst some of these people who were pro it and now are anti it is them actually accepting their role, their sort of mea culpa. Yes, I did it. I messed up, and this is what I intend to do moving forward. And I think that is what is missing for many people. Do you think that would make a change if some of these people actually did that?
Sonia, I think you've hit the nail on the head in what you've said, in like what is missing is humility. And what is missing across the world is a bit of humility. And if you look at the way that you're being pushed, the opposite of humility is pride. And it's the sin that God hates the most. Now, in our society today, we have a whole month that worships pride and celebrates pride. And pride is called the beginning of all sin for a reason. As soon as you start thinking that you're this incredible person and I'm so great and I need to make all these decisions for myself, you know, you come unstuck. And I think we have a lot of pride in today's society. I think it's the main problem that we have, and a lot more humility would help. But when you talk about humility, when you talk about saying, look, I'm not that great and I need some help from somewhere else, is what a lot of people used to do. And now no one's encouraged to do that anymore. Everyone's taught that their own opinion is so very important. How many followers you've got is the best thing. No one wants to take any humility, but I think it would help a lot, Sonia, a bit of humility. I think it would.
Let's introduce it right now, this Monday morning. Let us all have a little bit more humility as we approach this week, talking about which I take it that you haven't seen Dan Wooten's top 50 freedom fighters list, have you?
Includes such people as
Tristan and Andrew Tate. And I had a pile of tweets of people saying, where is Sonia Poulton on this? Well, probably I've been left off on account of the fact that I was one of the people asking questions about Dan Wooten. That's how these lists happen,
you don't want to
basically.
Be on that list.
No, I don't want to be on that list.
Romanian
absolutely
sex traffickers,
not.
Allegedly, or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, allegedly. Right, on allegedly. That note, Alistair, wonderful having you with us this morning, everybody. This is Alistair Williams explaining and showing us exactly why he might be a cancel comedian, but he's still funny as anything. We'll be right back.
I said, could she die? And the doctor said she could. It was so scary.
When I started clawing at my neck and trying to breathe, and I thought, you know, what are we going to do if I die here? How's everyone going to go on?
When someone's gravely sick or injured in the bush, they rely on the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But now the Flying Doctor needs your help to fund vital medical equipment and supplies. Please search Flying Doctor online to give a regular gift of just $10. You can help equip the Flying Doctor's teams to respond to any emergency anywhere. Search Flying Doctor online. Become a part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service and help save lives in the bush.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
But remember, there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay. And around the world for any animal, any disaster. Search ifa.org/disaster-ready.
TNT. Sonia Poulton and today's news talk, TNT.
And on the subject of do we forgive people who have previously promoted harmful, dangerous official narratives, Chris said, don't forgive, but forget them. They don't exist to me now. If they apologise, I'll reconsider, but they don't generally. No, they don't. And Just a Bloke says to Alistair, love many, trust few, and learn to paddle your own canoe. We love that. And Peter says, if they are sorry they messed up, then yes, but are untrustworthy wind vanes out there that change as the tide is turning, but can easily turn back the other way. E.g. Piers Morgan. He is a perfect case in point. Thank you for bringing him to our attention in this discussion. Peter, much appreciated. Now, I am delighted, yes, delighted to be joined by TNT's political editor, Basil Valentine. Good morning to you, Basil.
Good morning, Sonia. Lovely to see you on this fine and windy morning. I wouldn't mind a bit of global warming. Still very cold here in Britain, isn't it?
It is, actually. I went out earlier this morning and I was actually shocked by the wind and how strong it was around here, around southwest London, greater southwest London. But but hopefully the weather will improve. And so look, Basil, we're going to talk about something that is just all over the news. Absolutely. Events over the weekend between Iran and Israel seemingly placed the world war on a war footing. But the big question here is, of course, how will Israel continue to respond to this? And what can be done, Basil, to prevent the Middle East descending into an all-out war and bringing us all along with it? And of course, I know that you are more than capable of analysing this fully, which is why I'm delighted that you are my last guest today to do so, Basil. Tell us your thoughts about the weekend.
Well, yes, I mean, it was a relief to some extent to be woken up this morning by the wind and rain down here on the south coast rather than the warm glow of thermonuclear war, which might sound a bit fanciful, but believe it or not all that far away from where we are at the moment. You're absolutely right. The key question now is how do the Israelis respond to the Iranian response to the drone attack overnight? Now, the first thing to remember is that the Iranians didn't kill anyone. So in terms of tit-for-tat casualties, there was a 7-year-old girl apparently seriously injured, but nobody was killed. So the Israelis don't really have any sort of morally legitimate or justifiable claim to kill any more Iranian nationals. The war cabinet meeting this morning has broken up without a decision, apparently. And the longer that they leave it, the less likely it is there is likely to be a major Israeli response. The United States have said that they will not join any retaliatory response, which is a very welcome breath of sanity from this regime. But I do also want to just point out, we've seen blanket coverage of these overnight raids by the Iranians. Lots of articles in the media about how Israelis have been running for cover and how traumatized they all are. And, you know, meanwhile, what the Iranians launched on Israel yesterday was a pinprick compared to the machete attack that the Israelis have launched on Gaza. More people were killed in the West Bank yesterday, you know. So we have to get it all in proportion a little bit.
Media priorities. It's media priorities, isn't it, Basil? And also, so just for those, because not everybody has immersed themselves in this coverage, so walk us through it. What was it that sparked Iran's initial drone attack?
Well, the Israelis, although they haven't admitted it, somewhat bizarrely, really, used missiles, you know, from fighter aircraft to destroy a building adjacent to the Iranian consulate in Damascus, killing 2 senior generals and 5 other military personnel. One of those generals was the person that Israeli intelligence claimed, though not in public, to have been the guy who gave the green light to the October the 7th Hamas attack. So it all comes back to that. He apparently was the bloke that said to Hamas, yes, you go ahead and, launch your mini invasion and hostage taking exercise. Worth remembering that the whole point of the Hamas invasion, in inverted commas, because it wasn't really a full scale invasion of October the 7th, was to take hostages who they could then uses bargaining chips to get what I can only call Palestinian hostages released. There are thousands of Palestinians held in Israeli prisons, a number that has shot up since October the 7th by 8,000, including many women and children who are held for months, if not years, without charge. So Hamas thought, well, you know, what sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. We'll kidnap some of their lot. And then we've got some bargaining chips. Well, of course, everything, all bets were off, and we've seen the complete obliteration of Gaza with the appalling human suffering and casualties as a result. Anyway, back to the narrative. So because this bloke, General Mohammed of Iran, supposedly gave the green light to Hamas on October the 7th, he was assassinated along with six of his colleagues. Now, that's a breach of the Vienna Convention. Even in the Second World War, foreign countries' embassies were regarded as sacrosanct. You couldn't touch them, you know. So very, very serious. And what has really aggrieved the Iranians is that there has been no international condemnation of that attack. And that's quite understandable, really. If we imagine for a moment that an Israeli embassy anywhere in the world had been blown up in retaliation for what Israel has done in Gaza, well, you know, we'd hear the wailing and gnashing of teeth all the way from Tel Aviv to London and across to Washington.
Well, I think that's an important point you make there, is the absolute disparity in responses. I think that is so key and important here. And obviously what we saw yesterday was a plethora of politicians, including the British Prime Minister, including Boris Johnson, come out. I'm actually going to read you Boris Johnson's tweet, Basil, because I found it quite egregious and really tells us where they're coming from. He wrote, "The Iranian onslaught on Israel is outrageous and must be repelled. Proud that the RAF has already been involved. Time for all Israel's friends and allies to rally to the defense of the only democracy in the Middle East." That sounds like a done deal to me, Basil. Am I wrong there?
Well, absolutely. It's the usual, you know, unequivocal, full-throated support of the Zionist regime. Because they have elections in Israel, therefore Boris thinks he can call it a democratic state. But democracy consists more than simply having elections every few years. And how can it be a democracy when half the population, the Palestinian half, live under a very brutal apartheid regime? We leapt to the defense and shot down some of these Iranian drones over Syria and Jordan, essentially a sort of tangential act of war against Iran. Israel isn't a member of NATO, so there's no formal defense pact with them. So a lot of people have been asking, why wasn't the House of Commons asked? How come Rishi Sunak thought he could suddenly unilaterally act in this way? But as we know, all the normal norms and protocols do not apply when it comes to Israel. So the Iranians were hoping all last week that there would be a Security Council motion condemning Israel's bombing of the consulate in Damascus. And there wasn't. Had there been, they might not have done this. So, you know, this is now the most dangerous moment we're in. You know, the day before yesterday, right, we knew something was going to happen. There was the ship, which was owned by an Israeli shipping magnate, boarded in the Straits of Hormuz. That's sort of fairly standard practice. We thought that might be it, or that the Iranians might limit themselves to using their proxies, Hezbollah, in the Lebanon to sort of step up their rocket attacks on Israel. But that was that didn't really happen. And so we had what happened at the weekend. Now is the dangerous moment. If the Israelis decide that they are going to launch a full-scale assault or send, you know, intercontinental missiles to Iranian soil, then all bets are off and we could be in a very, very dark place indeed. But for all it, the Iron Domes and the support from the United States and UK succeeded in downing all these drones, they wouldn't do so well against a full-on Iranian missile attack, particularly if Hezbollah joined in. Believe it or not, between them, they have the firepower to flatten Tel Aviv in a matter of minutes. And should that happen, there's every likelihood the Israelis would respond with nuclear weapons. So right, that's why I said I was pleased this morning to be woken up by the wind and not the warm glow of thermonuclear fission.
Absolutely. But also, I wonder what you think about the UK's involvement, because now what we have a politician saying actively, well, the UK is now absolutely involved in Middle East conflict, obviously with our RAF. So what were your thoughts when you heard that this had taken place?
It's people have been tweeting things like, you know, Israel is our ally and Iran is our enemy. Well, you know, Israel is our ally, and as much as we may be complicit in the ultimate war crime of genocide, we should be putting distance between ourselves and the Israelis at the moment, not cozying up to them. We should be holding to them to the account for the mass civilian casualties in Gaza. So, you know, and Iran, our enemy? Well, they're not my enemy. You know, this is an entirely bilateral dispute between Iran and Israel. It has nothing whatsoever to do with Britain. The United States spent $1.1 billion on defending Israel last night. That was the cost of the operation at a time when, you know, the United States is basically falling apart, you know, 60,000 homeless. But it's a question of where your priorities are. It will have cost the British taxpayer money, and bases in Cyprus were used, apparently, all without the knowledge, let alone the permission of the UK Parliament. Not that we could expect a whole lot from them at the moment, Sonia. No. Can we? We can only hope that after the next election, the composition of the UK Parliament is very different from what it is now, because at the moment, to be perfectly honest, it would merely be a rubber stamp for Sunak's actions. You know, George Galloway is the far and away the most outspoken person in the House of Commons who's critical of Israel, and he only got back into Parliament a few weeks ago.
Right, and he may not be there when we have a full general election as well.
Oh, I think he'll be there. I think he'll be there after the general election. Yeah, and I think he might have a few colleagues with him as well.
Yeah. Oh, that would be interesting. Well, so Basil, obviously Parliament, they're back after Easter recess today, aren't they? You know, just one of their many 15 weeks that they have each year, obviously off on holiday, because clearly 4 weeks like the rest of us is not enough. But so can you see any major changes taking in place in Parliament today regarding what happened over the weekend?
No, is the short answer. I imagine Keir Starmer, who is every bit as keen a supporter of Israel as Rishi Sunak, will probably simply applaud the Prime Minister for his actions, if indeed the Prime Minister took the action. We never know whether it wasn't simply the military acting under standing orders, you know. All I expect to hear from Parliament is the same echo chamber that we get on social media from politicians about Israel's right to defend itself, how the Iranian attack was entirely unjustified, and so on and so forth. That I'd be amazed if we heard anything else, except from one or two Labour left-wingers and Galloway.
Any thoughts on how this may develop over the next few days, Basil?
Well, the hope is that, you know, there was a UN Security Council meeting yesterday where the Iranians and the Israelis traded barbs, as you can imagine. You know, Guterres, is the Secretary General, is heavily involved. Biden has apparently told Netanyahu to, and I quote, take the win. In other words, Israelis succeeded in killing this important Iranian general. The Iranians haven't killed anyone, and their attack was aimed, I believe, solely at military targets. Therefore, you could say, well, 7-0 to the Israelis. They killed 7 Iranians. The Iranians have killed nobody. The Israelis were able to demonstrate the lockstep support they have from Britain and the US. In a funny kind of way, both sides are claiming victory at the moment.
Always.
It's a battle of prestige at the moment. You know what the Israelis are like. They're always very keen to appear to come out on top in any kind of conflict. You know, Netanyahu will be under pressure from his, let's not forget, extreme cabinet to do something else, to hit the Iranians again. But the fact that the US would not support a direct attack on Iranian soil will surely cause them to act with restraint. and, you know, and not escalate any further. As a betting man, I would say it's 6-4 on. So that means a 60% chance that we don't see any further escalation, and about 40% that we do see further escalation. But nobody knows. I mean, this really
nobody knows, of course. Let me just ask you.
There's still a speak in America.
Yeah, absolutely. Basil, let me just ask you a quick one, because I think it is interesting. And that is, obviously, we hear a lot about the international community supporting Israel's right to defend itself. But what do you think Russia and China are currently thinking as they're looking on this at the moment?
Well, they don't want to get drawn into it. I mean, that is the one of the few positive things, is that the Chinese are very much a force for peace these days, in spite of the way we provoke them. And outside of Ukraine, so are the Russians. You know, they don't want World War III. Iran has become an important ally since the founding of BRICS, but that doesn't mean that they would jump in on Iran's side should, you know, more major hostilities break out. So, you know, it's a very, very dangerous moment for the world. You made the point about everybody always bleating on about Israel's right to defend itself. What about Iran's right to defend itself? What about the Palestinians' right to defend themselves? You know.
Right. So Perfect note to end this show on. Yes, absolutely, Basil. Sorry, I have to end there, which is always unfortunate. But everybody, this, of course, is TNT's political editor, Basil Valentine. You will be hearing more comment throughout the day on TNT. Don't go anywhere. Thank you, everybody, for joining us this morning. All our wonderful guests, our wonderful commentary. Stick around. Obviously, after the break will be David Curtin. Whole raft of brilliant shows on today's News Talk today. Again, thank you to everybody who has brought me here. The whole team who has made Sonia Poulton Show on today's News Talk exactly what it is. Have a fantastic Monday. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.